afternoon. My name is Lynn, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the State of Communities of Color conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Ms. Vanessa Cardenas. You may begin your conference.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. My name is Vanessa Cardenas, and I am Director of Progress 2050 at the Center for American Progress. And we thank you this morning for joining us on this press call. Today, we want to talk about the state of communities of color in the U.S. economy ahead of the President's State of the Union next Tuesday. And as we all know, communities of color have suffered greatly in the Great Recession. And as we enter 2011, it's important to know what sort of policy recommendations there will be, or what policy, new policy will be implemented to help sort of close the gaps that exist between communities of color and other groups here in the United States. And to join us to discuss this very important issue, we are very pleased to have with us Representative James Clyburn, as well as other speakers. So I will first ask the representative to start the call with his opening remarks, and then I will go ahead and introduce the rest of the speakers.
Well, very good. Thank you very much for having me, and thanks to all of you who will be making statements, and thanks for your contributions to this effort that I think must be made and must be done so in a very efficient and hopefully effective way. Back when President Obama was still president-elect, we had a pretty big meeting, a bipartisan, bicameral meeting, and we talked about what needed to be done in order to rescue our economy and get things back on track. In that meeting, I said to the president that I thought that all of what I had heard in the discussion was very, very positive, except that I was very concerned that we would move to put things back in order without adequately looking at those communities that have been traditionally locked out of these kinds of efforts. We can go all the way back to the 1930s and see what responses were put in place, and we can see that even when they were having civilian conservation corps and the work the WPA work Progress Administration, communities that we now call communities of color were not brought along in those recoveries. And that's why we see today, when unemployment for the country is at 9 or 9.5%, unemployment for a lot of the communities of color or sometimes twice that. And it is seems today that already a recovery is taking place. It is showing up in the investor community, but it's not showing up in communities of color, which says to me that we are in, it could very well be, that the same kind of recovery will be, is taking place. We are going to see people saying we are back, and these communities will be in deeper trouble than they were before. And so it is very, very important. I might say this. In recognition of this, when we put the stimulus package together, we put in two different sections of that bill, something we call the 10, 20, 30 Amendment, both on the tax side and the investment side, because we wanted to focus 10% of the money in those communities where 20% or more of the population has been stuck below the poverty level for the last 30 years. That's why we got 10, 20, 30. I believe that something of this order needs to be done across the board as we go forward. So as we listen to the identification of the problems and the numbers that are we know are bad, I would hope that we start thinking of some creative ways for us to get this administration and this Congress to focus on bringing these communities along in this recovery. So thank you so much for allowing me to be here, and I look forward to the presentations.
Thank you, Representative. And now I would like to introduce the rest of our speakers. Joining me today is Dr. Christian Weller. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, and he authored the report that we're releasing today entitled The State of Communities of Color in the U.S. Economy. The report can be found online on our website at americanprogress.org. We also have with us Peter Morris. He's Director of Strategy and Partnerships at the National Congress of American Indians. We have Lisa Hasegawa. She's the Executive Director of the National Coalition for Asian Pacific American Community Development. Catherine Singley. She's a Senior Policy Analyst at the National Council of La Raza. And Dr. Valerie Ralston Wilson. She's Vice President of Research at the National Urban League Policy Institute. And now I will turn it over to Dr. Christian Weller.
Well, thank you very much, Vanessa. I should say that this is a co-authored report with Jaron Fields and Folayemi Akbede. You can find it on our website. And it was a fun project to work with my two colleagues, although the numbers are incredibly depressing, as you all know. But I want to sort of frame the numbers a little bit. And I want to make three points. The communities of colors have experienced a more severe decline in economic security than white families during the recession. Importantly, that decline, that accelerated decline among communities of color, came after they had already experienced a weakening or a weaker economic experience during the 2000s, during the last business cycle that ran from March 2001 to December 2007. So the recession made a bad situation a lot worse. And finally, the third point I want to make is that because these are consistent differences between communities of color and white families, the policy focus cannot be just on simply job creation. It has to be targeted to make sure that we spread the benefits of economic growth more evenly across groups, that we help communities of color along to help them dig out of the deeper hole that they're in. Let me just go through some of the numbers and just give you a little bit more detail. The Great Recession of 2007 to 2009 produced widespread economic losses for communities of colors and white families alike, losses that still linger to this day. Economic losses were, however, more pronounced among communities of color than among whites. Communities of color will have to climb out of a deeper hole to regain the same level of economic security as they had before the crisis. Employment levels were still well below where they were at the start of the recession. For all families, those gaps are, however, much larger for communities of color than for white families. We estimate, for instance, that the employment levels for African Americans and Latinos in December 2010, 18 months into the recovery, were 9% below where they were in December 2007, whereas for white families, they were only 7% below where they were. Still, everybody has to catch up, but the hole is bigger, and that's comparing it to the situation of December 2007. We observe similar losses or similar differences when it comes to unemployment rates, to earnings, to homeownership, to poverty rates, and other indicators. The bottom line is that the recession has generally been more severe for communities of color than for white families. The important part is, however, that while the recession has been more severe, the starting point was much worse for families, for communities of color, when the recession started. Unemployment rates, earnings, wealth levels, homeownership, retirement savings were substantially lower for communities of color when we control for all characteristics. And that has been true for many communities, but especially so for African Americans who, for instance, saw the few economic gains after the last recession, after 2001, and experienced, for instance, decreases in home ownership starting in 2004, 3 years before the current recession hit. Latinos also experienced economic weaknesses well before the recession started, the Great Recession. Their employment levels started to decrease in the first half of 2006, along with the end of the American housing boom. Communities of color went into the most severe recession since the Great Depression from a position of substantially greater economic weaknesses than white families. That also means that focusing just on labor and job creation is not enough in order to make sure that we ultimately help communities of color to dig out of the hole the hole is deeper for communities of color, to bring them along, and ultimately to make sure that communities of color are as well prepared as other communities, as white communities, for the eventuality of another economic crisis. I want to highlight basically two sets of policies. One is we need a focus on short-term policies. As the recovery is slowly gaining hold in the labor market, we need to have continued unemployment insurance benefits. We need to have a conversation of possibly easier eligibility for unemployment insurance benefits to make sure that unemployment benefits will be extended to communities of color to the same degree that they're for white families. We also need to have other longer-term policies. They need to focus both on jobs. They need to focus on the quality of jobs, in particular, for instance, through an easier way to join a union, through paycheck fairness, through universal health insurance, to easier access to retirement savings, elimination of predatory lending practices, and targeted homeownership programs for communities of color, to make sure that we target the entire set of economic characteristics that matter, not just jobs, but also the quality of jobs and the ability to save from earnings out of a job. Thank you very much. And with that, I'll turn it over to the next speaker.
Thank you, Christian. Peter, would you go next, please?
Yeah, wonderful. Good morning, everyone. It's my pleasure to represent the National Congress of American Indians on today's call. For those of you who don't know NCAI, we're the membership organization representing the interests of the nation's 565 federally recognized tribal governments. In some respects, I'm here this morning to talk about the first endnote in the report, which is always a daunting task. It's an important endnote, and it offers possibly the most promise in terms of policy innovation. The endnote says, we don't have good data to represent Native people. And what I want to do with my few minutes here is tell you some of the things we do know about Native people and what that means in terms of the opportunities for policy innovation that can affect the American economy as a whole, as well as Native communities specifically. With respect to employment, we know that the picture for tribal communities has been dire for generations. In 2000, and some of you can remember back to this point when the national unemployment rate was only 3.5%, at that time the unemployment rate on Indian reservations was over 22%. In late 2010, the Economic Policy Institute released a report that showed that during the Great Depression, the unemployment rate for Native people had grown at 1.6 times the rate of white unemployment. Like Christian just said, the gap had widened significantly. And the EPI report also talked about an element in this report, which is the employment-to-population ratio. And what it showed was that the employment-to-population ratio in Native communities is the lowest of any population group in the United States. It had dropped from 58.5% at the beginning of the recession to just above 50% in the first half of 2010. The most recent census data on poverty shows that on-reservation poverty rates for Native people is more than three times the poverty rate for the nation as a whole and higher than for any other group. A full 31.7% of Native people on reservations lives in poverty. But it's important to note, and I think my colleagues will echo this insight, that this call isn't just about telling a depressing story. In Indian country, we are most concerned that America is missing an opportunity to unleash the potential of communities of color, particularly the potential of Native people. Because tribes are governments, there is a unique opportunity for Native communities to create jobs for their citizens and residents of surrounding communities. Tribes own 10% of the nation's energy resources. Their lands hold the potential to meet the nation's energy needs 4.5 times over with solar power, and 20% of the nation's energy needs can be met with wind power from tribal lands. Tribes can also take on large-scale public work projects through use of economic development bonds, just like local and state governments can, creating numerous jobs for surrounding communities for both native and non-native citizens. And there are simple policy innovations that the federal government can implement to streamline the process for tribes to take advantage of these alternative energy resources. Fundamentally, Native people seek a partnership with the federal government and with other communities of color that will build strong tribal nations and so achieve our collective vision for a stronger America. And I'll turn it back to the folks at CAP.
Great. Thank you, Peter. Lisa?
Yes. Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be on this call. I'm with the National Coalition for Asian Pacific American Community Development, National Capacity for short. We work in low-income, predominantly urban communities across the country, a network of community-based community development and social service groups in about 17 states. And again, our focus is on low-income Asian American and Pacific Islander communities, so it's a great to be on this call with Christian. I know that we've worked over time to really get better data about the API community and to really help us tell a complex story, because with Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, because of the diversity in our community, oftentimes the nuances of what's happening with specific subpopulations is often masked when the data is aggregated. And so thanks, Peter, for kicking us off. We were interested to note that this CAP report found that in the first 2 years of the recession, the poverty rate for Asian Americans increased twice as fast as it did for the white community. And by 2009, 1 out of 8 Asian American households were in poverty. So that was significant because oftentimes I think Asian American communities sort of trend better than the general population, closer to or even better than sometimes as the white population. But in this situation, we see indications that the recession is impacting the community as a whole, which is something that we often don't see. Similar to other communities of color, Native American population, I think, Peter, you said over 30% of poverty on some of the reservations. We know that in 2008, 40% of Cambodians in California live in poverty. It's the state with the most, with the largest Asian American population, and it's also the state with the largest Cambodian population. So you do have specific Asian subpopulations that have vastly different statistics with regards to poverty than the general Asian American population. The CAP report also noted that Asian Americans poverty rates stand now at, I believe, 12.5% at this point, and it has increased by, I believe, 2.3 percentage points from 2007 through 2009. And so, again, that's double the rate of the white population, which was at 1.2 percentage points. On a number of different indicators, the research that we've collected from our network of organizations on the ground, we have noted also that the home ownership rate had dropped fastest for the Asian American population in 2008. And we believe that this was because there was a steep rise in home ownership, and we think that much of that rise was because of many of the predatory and unsustainable home mortgage products that were out in our communities, specifically targeted to many Asian and immigrant communities. One of the other things that we had noticed was that Asian Americans, often if you look at the foreclosure statistics, they have a lower rate of default on home mortgages, but they're losing their homes at a faster rate than the general population. And so that means that when they are having difficulties, they're more quick to go right directly into foreclosure, meaning that we think that they don't have access to information about what their options are, possibly indicating some issues with language barriers, et cetera, and access to information about a loan modification and other options. So I think that I will stop there. I think that we concur with the CAP report that it is very concerning that the recession has impacted all communities of color and, in particular, specific segments of Asian Americans.
Great. Thank you, Lisa. Catherine, would you go next, please?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. My name is Catherine Singley, and I'm here representing the National Council of La Raza, and NCLR is the largest national Latino civil rights and advocacy organization in the country. Special thanks today to Dr. Christian Weller and the Center for American Progress for really committing their time and resources to looking at the recession through a very important lens. I believe this is the third State of Communities of Color report, and it's a pleasure to be on this call today. And it helps frame the policy debate for the new Congress ahead. I want to point out that NCLR has also released an analysis this morning of Latino employment by industry, taking a look back over the past year. We're calling it Fits and Starts, how Latino employment growth in growing and shrinking industries, December 2009 to December 2010. So Fits and Starts, because that really illustrates our central message here, which is there are some potential bright spots in certain industries that have actually added workers over the past year, and it appears that in some of those industries that Latinos, despite a 13% unemployment rate, are actually helping to prop up this fragile economic recovery. You can find that analysis on our website, www.nclr.org. And I think the central message is that we will continue to only have a recovery of fits and starts without bold policies to jumpstart demand, to create jobs, and to build on this very early progress that we're seeing. Without targeted policies that reach communities of color with job creation and with good quality job opportunities, our recovery will not progress beyond fits and starts, and communities of color will be left behind. Our president of NCLR, Janet Murguia, sees the recession and the recovery in three ways, and she describes it in three ways. First, on the books, as we all know, the recession is over, but for millions of workers and families, there is still no light at the end of the tunnel. Second, this hasn't been a fair fight. So as Christian was describing, there were communities that were hit harder than others, and consequently, they have a bigger hole to dig out of. So a worker with skills and management experience may still be unemployed if that worker has spent his whole career in construction, as so many of our Latino community has. Or a family that's finally saved enough to buy a home, they can still find themselves in foreclosure if that plant down the street isn't reopening again for business and the jobs aren't coming back. And the third reality is that the policy solutions to this crisis have been insufficient. That nascent recovery that we're seeing, those positive signs that I think the media wants to be able to focus on, are in danger of burning out those bright spots if we don't do more to spur job creation. The rising tide has not lifted all boats, as the representative alluded to before. In fact, we have hard evidence that businesses don't have enough certainty about the future to hire permanent workers. And this is an issue that's particularly affecting Latino workers. Last year, employment services, temporary services that place workers on the job, filling vacancies for a temporary amount of time, grew by 12%. There's nearly 3 million people working in employment services, and Latinos represent 18% of those workers. As the fastest growing segment of the workforce, it is unsustainable for Latinos to have such a tenuous hold on permanent employment, and it doesn't bode well for sustainable economic recovery. We believe that's not sustainable, and it's not the way to build a true economic recovery. So we want to focus on solutions, and the way we plan to do that this year is to focus on current economic realities. What's happening on the ground? Where are those industries growing? Where are good quality jobs being added, and how can we build on that momentum in the short term? So in the coming months, you'll be hearing more from NCLR. We're interviewing local labor market experts currently, digging deeper on some state progress, some state and regional bright spots where jobs are being added and workers are getting back on the job. And we'll be offering ways to scale that up on a national level and offering our ideas to both sides of Congress. And we look forward to working with the new Congress to implement some of these solutions and to jumpstart growth. We have a long history of working on economic and employment issues, and we definitely appreciate the other organizations here in Washington and at the community level, National Capacity, National Urban League, the American Indians Congress, and all of the other partners on the call today. And thank you for your time and look forward to questions.
Great. Thank you, Catherine. And next is Dr. Valerie Rolson-Wilson from the National Urban League.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Valerie Wilson. I am representing the National Urban League this morning. And the National Urban League is a community-based movement devoted to empowering African Americans economically through our direct services, as well as the research and advocacy that we do here in the Policy Institute in Washington. I would like to thank our friends at the Center for American Progress for putting together this State of Communities of Color in the U.S. Economy Report and for drawing attention to many of the critical issues that the recession has presented, not only to all American families, but to communities of color in particular. Each year we release our State of Black America publication and Equality Index, which highlights many of the same inequities that are presented in this report. And that includes the 2-to-1 black-to-white unemployment gap, the poverty gap among African Americans that is nearly three times that of their white counterparts, and the tremendous wealth gap that stems from lower home ownership rates, less home equity, and a lack of other types of assets, including retirement accounts. Each year when we release this information, we hear from those who suggest that the State of Black America is always the same sad story, or that we're always presenting the same gripes. So it's good to see another report and to have other voices speaking out on the very issues that are a part of the day-to-day realities of the National Urban League and our nearly 100 local affiliates across the country who served 2.1 million people in 2010 and act as economic first responders in their communities. I think that there can also be some tendency to view the economic security of African Americans or Latinos or Asian Americans or Native Americans only in their individual group silos. But one of the great things about this report is that it brings together all of these stories to demonstrate how similar many of the issues are, and that when taken together, things like unemployment, poverty, foreclosure, and retirement insecurity impact a significant and growing part of the American population. And so these are problems that we as a nation cannot afford to ignore if we want to rebuild a strong economy that operates at its maximum capacity. And, you know, that echoes the comments of many of my colleagues so far. One of the points made in the report that we've been making as well is that the previous economic recovery resulted in few economic gains for African Americans in terms of employment, wages, and home ownership. So the impact of this recession has been especially deep in many of our communities. I remember when it was a big news story when national unemployment rate reached 10% in October 2009, and that was certainly cause for alarm. But I also know that at that point, the unemployment rate for African Americans had been at or near 10% for 8 years already. And so that brings me to another point of the CAP report that the National Urban League has also been actively advocating for. Representative Clyburn alluded to it earlier, and I hope that we hear this point being made during the State of the Union address, and that is the need for targeted policies. Again, my other colleagues have already echoed these sentiments as well. The National Urban League responded to the crisis in 2009 with the release of a six-point plan for putting Americans back to work that did just that. It targeted job creation, business development, and workforce development efforts at areas with persistently high unemployment rates and persistently high rates of poverty. This year, the National Urban League is continuing a year-long focus on jobs under the theme of Jobs Rebuild America. And we've kicked off our efforts this month with the release of a 12-point job creation plan that we're calling A Dozen Dynamic Ideas for Urban America. That plan updates and expands upon our six-point plan to more closely reflect our current economic environment. Also this afternoon, our president, Mark Morial, will be on MSNBC's Andrea Mitchell Reports at 1 p.m. to discuss our plan. But it's currently available on our social media platform, IamEmpowered.com, and it will also be featured in our State of Black America 2011 publication, which is due to be released on March 31st. And the theme for this year's publication is Jobs, Innovation, and Economic Recovery. And we will also be convening a series of roundtable discussions beginning next month as we continue to move forward on developing a comprehensive plan to bring economic recovery to low and moderate income urban communities. Again, our plan is on IamEmpowered.com, and I'll be happy to answer any more questions about the plan or any of the other things that we're doing later during the Q&A. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Valerie. And on that note, I would like us to open up the lines.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from Ben Evans with the AP.
Hi. Yeah, this is a question for Congressman Clyburn, if he's still on.
Oh, no, he's not. I'm sorry. He had to leave the call, but I can direct it to his communications person.
Well, maybe just for the others, is this these sorts of plans something you're hoping to hear from the president during his State of the Union next week?
This is Christian Weller. I'll jump in as the economist here. Yes, I think when you look at the numbers and when you look at where our policy attention has been, we've been focused on jobs. But what the data very clearly show, and I apologize for the I think part of the story has to be to push for more data on Native Americans. But when you look at the data for African Americans, for Latinos, and for Asian Americans, it is clear that what emerges from all of the data is a job is not enough. We clearly need to focus on jobs, but we do need to focus. We need to get the policymakers, the administration, and Congress to focus aggressively on targeted policies to create good jobs. Let me just highlight very quickly the data that Lisa already mentioned on the Asian Americans. It's very interesting data because what you see is the unemployment rate tends to be lower than for whites, the employment rate tends to be higher than for whites, but yet the poverty rate for Asian Americans tends to be higher than for whites, and for instance, the health insurance coverage rate tends to be lower. So we see similar data trends for Latinos during the last expansion, where we saw good job growth, but not good quality job growth. And that's ultimately what I think sort of what I would like to see is more an emphasis on targeted policies to create more jobs for targeted job efforts for communities of color to make sure the communities of colors come out of the deeper hole that they're in, but also that there is a second conversation about the quality of jobs that we're creating in this recovery.
And maybe if I could just jump in really quickly, this is Peter with NCAI. We fully expect to see from the State of the Union and from the administration's approach going forward, the administration needs policies that make sense to a different environment in terms of the relationship with Congress. And we see a huge opportunity with respect to energy production on tribal lands, which is really just a very simple getting government out of the way so that citizens and tribal communities can create jobs and bring domestic energy production to increase. We see some huge opportunities for collaboration across the aisle between Republicans and Democrats, and this being something that the administration can get behind and has made some initial moves even in the last week or so to build out the tribal energy staffing over at the Department of Energy. So we see some huge potential for that to create jobs for tribal members, but also other communities of color and impoverished communities in America who live in and around rural communities where Native people are concentrated.
Valerie, did you want to weigh in on this?
Sure. I mentioned earlier that we also expect to hear from the administration that, you know, they are moving in the direction of more targeted policies. We've been very proactive about advocating the types of things that we think will be effective at addressing communities with what we call chronic rates of high unemployment and extended periods of high unemployment. Our new 12-point plan addresses many of the current realities that we face. For example, we're proposing that there be the development of a national public-private jobs initiative to create jobs and train residents to stimulate growth in many areas that have been growing or have indicated that there would be some future growth. That includes technology and broadband, healthcare, manufacturing, transportation, as well as the public infrastructure and clean energy. And so we think it's very important that not only, as Christian has already said, that jobs are created, but jobs are created in a way that all people have access to them. We've also strongly advocated for reforming and our workforce development system so that it's more effective in delivering services to people to provide the training and education needed for the jobs of the future.
And this is Catherine from NCLR. If I could just weigh in briefly, what Christian was saying about job quality is vitally important. I don't think anyone can ignore, and I don't think the president will ignore, the budget climate that we're in right now. There's no money to be wasted, and there is going to be heavy scrutiny of any policy proposal that comes up in the next couple of years for good reason. So we want to make sure that the policy proposals to stimulate job creation are effective and are targeted in the areas that need them most, and in the industries that are most likely to run with those incentives, and to do so in a way that respects the American worker.
Okay, great. We need to move along. Can we get another question?
Our next question comes from Eliz Dowdy with Precinct Reporter Group News.
Yes, good morning. My question is for Valerie. Valerie, would you please respond to the information that you gave on your website where readers can go and get the information?
Sure. It's IamEmpowered.com. And on that site, we have our four empowerment areas, jobs, education, housing, and health. Click on there under jobs. There's a link there to our 12-point blueprint for urban jobs, rebuild America.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay, next question.
Your next question comes from Santiago Tavera with Notimex News Agency.
Yes, you mentioned in your report the need for immigration reform. Do you expect President Obama to mention this issue in the State of the Union?
Catherine, do you want to take that?
Sure. I don't think immigration reform is an issue that the president or the Congress can ignore. I think we saw a very disappointing effort at the end of the last Congress to pass just a piece of what's necessary to bring the undocumented out of the shadows and fully into the American society. And work and jobs is central to that. Latinos are the fastest growing segment of the workforce. And right now, job growth, as Christian stated, job growth is not keeping up with population growth. Latino employment to population ratio declined by 6.1 percentage points last year, according to Christian Capp's report. And this does not bode well for the future in terms of the strength, tapping the potential and the strength of the entire workforce. And part of
I should also mention that part of improving job quality is also fixing our broken immigration system that creates a two-tiered second-class workforce for those who are here with a different status.
I would add to this that diversity of the U.S. economy, of the U.S. labor force, of the U.S. population has always been sort of a strength, and it makes the American economy, the country, more resilient to the shocks that we've experienced. And that's sort of the long-term outlook in terms of why immigration, comprehensive immigration reform should be on the table. On the short run, we've documented through the Center for American Progress that giving undocumented immigrants a pathway into legalization, legal residency, is an economic boom. Bringing people out of the shadows into the formal economy will ultimately help to grow jobs in communities of color, and will help the disadvantaged. What you're asking is sort of a political question, but Peter already raised this, and I think it is very important. It seems to me, and I think to everybody in this call, a mistake from a political side, both for Congress and administration, not to engage on these issues of diversity in a positive way, and the State of the Union would be one of the opportunities to do so.
Great. Next question.
Our next question comes from Janine Fonden with UnityFirst.com.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to check in about youth. Looking at the next generation, this new pipeline of talent across all the different communities, can you just shed some light on some of the numbers that may be pertinent to really focusing this issue, whether it's from education, graduation rates, job opportunities? How are we really securing this next generation is going to get to where it needs to?
Well, when we wrote the report, we were already fairly depressed, so that's why we stopped including data on youth. Even you look at youth unemployment, in particular for African Americans, for which we have consistent data, you're talking unemployment rates approaching 40% as a country. So in some communities, this is obviously much worse. It is a persistent challenge. It is a long-term challenge. People who for years and years and years don't find jobs, can't enter the labor market, won't develop the skills, will feel left out, and will ultimately sort of be on the margins of the economy and the labor market. So this is a long-term challenge. I think it starts both with the education program, but ultimately making sure that we have an education system that works, but also a system that gives people opportunities when they graduate from high school, when they graduate from college, and that's ultimately where we, at least during the current situation, see some of the biggest problems. That yes, people build the skills. We had an effort for job training programs, internship programs last year through the stimulus program. When these things end, there have to be jobs, and they have to be good jobs that will ultimately, when we say good jobs, it's not just simply the pay and the benefit, but it will allow people to have a career in those chosen jobs, and it's not just simply a paycheck. And I think this is sort of a comprehensive discussion that needs to happen, but there has to be a separate conversation about what we're doing to our youth, especially those who do not go to college at this point.
And this is another area, this is Peter from NCAI, this is another area where unleashing the potential of communities of color is the way we'd like to frame the conversation. Given a third of Native people, and I think Vanessa's project at CAP emphasizes this, a third of Native people are under the age of 18, and minority communities broadly are younger on average than the broader population, and there's a huge opportunity here for some bipartisan investment in the kind of infrastructure, long-term visioning for education and a more effective system to get young people from communities of color into meaningful jobs and make sure that they're prepared for the leadership role that they'll play in 2050 and beyond.
Hi, this is Valerie. I'd also like to add to that, in addition to the whole issue of education, we have also been strong advocates of reinstating and restoring the Summer Youth Jobs Program as a standalone program, being that since it was sort of restructured into one of several programs that a state could elect to fund using their WIA funds, Since that change has been made, we've seen a dramatic decline in summer unemployment among youth. In particular, between 2000 and 2009, it was down 40% for blacks and 35% for whites. And we see this as important because those job opportunities provide a very important introduction to the labor force for a number of young people, their first experience with the job market and with employment and earnings. And so it's really critical to lay that foundation so that we do have a very strong and a very solid pipeline as we move forward.
And this is Lisa from National Capacity. I'll just add to that, the Economic Policy Institute did come out with the report with another surprising finding, which was that Asian American undergraduates were more likely to be unemployed after graduation. So we do have some indications that young people are having trouble finding employment in our community.
Great. I think we have time for one more question.
Our next question comes from Antonia Cadez with Law Opinion.
Hello, everybody. This is not the first time this issue of target policies for communities of color has been raised here in Washington, D.C. So what has changed now that would make the administration to move into this direction? Is there any difference that will push them into this direction now? And also, have you received any signs, any indication that the president is ready to move forward into this year?
This is Catherine. Antonietta, I can take your question. I think I'd like to return to the climate to begin with, the focus on balancing on reducing the budget deficit has put real pressure on programs that serve our communities, and also has put real pressure on any new ideas to create jobs, any new policies, any new spending. So we're going to have to do it in a very careful way. And I believe that what's changed is that any policy proposal that comes across a member of Congress's desk is going to have to take the test. Is this effective? How many jobs will this create? Are these good jobs? I believe should be one of the criteria. And so it's incumbent upon us in looking at our future labor market and these worrying indicators to make sure that communities of color are well positioned and are at the table when decisions are being made about where to invest in the coming years. And then as far as whether the president or the administration is moving in the direction of looking at targeted policies, I think there are some positive signs coming out of the Recovery Act, how those dollars were spent. The Summer Youth Jobs Program, as Valerie mentioned, is a good example of how funds were spent well with excellent results for youth in getting people employed over the summer. I think the Department of Labor has a set of national emergency grants, they're calling them, and they're considering emergency areas, places of high persistent unemployment, and directing funds to those areas. So there are some signs that this is the direction the administration is moving in, but it's going to have to be done carefully.
Okay, great. I think that concludes our call. I want to thank our speakers for joining us. It has been a pleasure working with you all, and also want to encourage those that are on the line to please visit our websites. And as I mentioned earlier, the CAP report is on our website at americanprogress.org. And if you have further questions or would like to get in touch with any of the speakers, including Representative Clyburn, please get in touch with us. I'll give you Raul Arce's phone number, who sent the advisory for this call. His phone number is 202-478-5318. And thanks, everybody, for joining us.
Thank you.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.